listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have Kevin Duffy with me once again. Kevin is the principal of Baring Asset Management, which he co-founded in 2002. The firm manages the Baring Core Fund and a contrarian macro-themed hedge fund with a flexible mandate. Kevin has really had a lot of success in 2008, 2009. And then after that, found a little tough going, and he had to revise his the way he invested. He was, I would say, Kevin is more of an ideologue at one point, and then he sort of realized that there's a way you can make money in good markets and bad markets. And so it's really a pleasure to have Kevin with us today. He writes a newsletter called The Coffee Can Portfolio, which you can sign up for, you can subscribe to, which I did earlier this morning. It's a very reasonable price subscription. Go to thecoffeecanportfolio.com to sign up for that letter. Thanks for joining me, Kevin.
Thanks for having me back on, and thanks for the vote of confidence in subscribing.
Well, it wasn't as if I sold my house to do it. But it didn't require that. But anyway, I do enjoy what you're doing and how you revised your investment strategy. I think it's really actually for someone like me who's still more of a free market ideologue. It's good. What you have to say is very helpful to me. So I'm really happy to have you from my personal perspective as well. You talked about some of the main themes, the countervailing forces at play that you are looking at. I'd like to sort of explore those with you, both negatives and positives. I thought maybe we start out with the negatives, some of the countervailing forces that you talk about first, and then when you get those out of the way, maybe we can go to the happier, positive themes.
Okay.
But the one that you mentioned is chickens are coming home to roost.
Yes. So I think we can go back as far as you want. We could go back to the founding of the Fed, but let's go back 15 years to the Great Financial Crisis, and the idea was to intervene and basically print more money, expand the Fed's balance sheet, and it gave us this long boom, but it also built up excesses and debts and malinvestment, and I think the chickens are coming home to roost from that policy. The Fed is essentially out of bullets. We are probably in a recession. The first quarter GDP was real GDP was down, I think, 1.5%. I don't think things have gotten any better in the second quarter. So we're probably in a recession. I think we are in a prolonged bear market. And I don't think this is going to be like the March 2020 downturn, where the Fed just came to the rescue.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned margin debt is still very high. It's too high, you say, by I guess historical standards, and cash levels are still too low.
Yes. The margin debt peaked last year at 900 billion and change. We're down about 17% this year, but margin debt is still a little over 3% of GDP, and that was actually the peak of the last two bubbles, the tech bubble and the credit bubble. So I think that we really need to probably get that down, maybe cut it in half from here. At least in terms of.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it comes to, sorry, Jay.
No, go ahead.
Then when it comes to the cash levels, I like to look at Charles Schwab reports their cash levels every month, and Are you hearing any distortion on your end?
A little bit, but it's
Okay.
I keep going.
Yeah, I will try to weather through. So the Schwab, the Charles Schwab cash levels, they report every month. It came out at 11.9%. The peak last year, the peak of the bubble, got down to 10.3%. But we should see that go over 20%. We should see those cash levels with the retail investor go over 20%. So we're not there yet. And I think the final negative is that we've had this asset inflation, right? And the whole idea behind the Fed policy has been the wealth effect. And so one way that you can measure this is if we were to look at a hypothetical 60-40 portfolio and then adjust it for year-over-year CPI, okay? And so I went back and I thought, well, let's use as a proxy the S&P 500 for the equity part and the TLT or the 20-year bond ETF for the bond part, and then let's adjust it for CPI. And if you go back to the great financial crisis in 2008, the worst of it, the worst wealth effect, reverse wealth effect, was from October of 07 to October of 08. It was a minus 22%. So as an investor in a, quote, conservative portfolio, you lost 22% of your purchasing power over that 12-month period. Now, the S&P was down 36%, but the bond portion helped you because it was up 8%. Okay, now let's fast forward to where we are as of the end of April. You're down in purchasing power, you're already down 13%. Now, that is despite the fact that the S&P 500 is flat over that time. So what's doing all the damage? Well, two things are doing the damage. One is CPI is running 8.2%. The other is that the TLT is down 12.5%. So the negatives, I think what is really different this time is what's going on in the bond market. And it is absolutely, you've got year to date, the TLT is down 29%, muni bonds down 22%, investment grades down 15%, high yield bonds down 10%. So there is a lot of damage in the bond market, and what's interesting is that the most damage is actually in the government area. I think that's telling us something. So that kind of sums up all the negatives.
All right. Well, are there ways, given your past history and ability to make money in these kind of markets, are there some ways you're playing this on the short end or the short side of the market?
Well, we're definitely hedging. We are short the S&P 500 and we're short the NASDAQ 100. So the big, the big names, I think, are still pretty expensive. Like if we were to look at valuations on Apple and Microsoft, a lot of stocks have come down, and they're certainly a lot cheaper than they were at the beginning of the year. But I think those types of stocks are still expensive, and I think there are other risks involved in those companies as well. We were short bonds. I covered that. I probably covered it a little bit too early. I think we're seeing some on the sentiment side. The market vein bullish consensus on treasuries came in at 38%. That's one of the lowest readings we've had in a while. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a rally in the bond market at some point, and we'll kind of look for another opportunity to get short. But I mean, down 29% on the TLT is probably a little bit late, at least for now.
Well, certainly you would think if the equity markets really get slammed hard, there would be some of that money going into the bond market. But let's turn to the positives then. Bubbles spawn anti-bubbles. That's one. Talk about that.
So bubbles spawn anti-bubbles. We saw this with the tech bubble in 2000, when the Nasdaq peaked in March of 2000. A lot of the old economy value stocks troughed at exactly the same time. It was like a mirror image. And so I think this time We've got this everything bubble. A lot of the bubble is in the index type, the passive investing index type stocks in the S&P 500, larger names. So I think if you look across the index divide, you can see some opportunities. Retailers, they were disrupted, very obviously by e-commerce over the past decade and a half. That story is very well known. What's not as well known is the fact that these companies have been through a tremendous amount of adversity. They first the damage from Amazon, they survived that. Then they got hit with COVID and the lockdowns, they survived that. And so, okay, we're going into a really bad recession right now, but I think these companies, a lot of them are battle tested, and these stocks are ridiculously cheap. I mean, they're not felony cheap yet, but I would call them easily dirt cheap. Gold and gold stocks, that's another sort of anti-bubble. We've had a lot of inflation and they've really not participated. You had the massive sell-off in Russia. We actually tried to catch the falling knife there, and I think that's going to turn out pretty well, but you can't even really invest there right now because the trading's been halted, unless you trade on the Moscow Stock Exchange. And then China, there's just this perception that we can cancel everybody around the world, and China sort of fits in with that. Boy, stocks in China have just gotten torched. Lots of stocks down 75%. I just looked at numbers on Alibaba. I mean, this is an amazing company, and it's trading at something like 11 times earnings. So we like KWEB is the China ETF. So yeah, that's kind of in the anti. Those would be some of the areas in the anti-bubble area.
Is that a KWEB? Is that an internet ETF?
It invests in companies like Tencent, Alibaba, JD.com. So it's really a lot of the internet names, e-commerce names, the kinds of things that we want to, look, there's a lot of negative things going on in China, and I'm not downplaying those, but I just think these are world-class companies that are on sale right now.
To what extent are you concerned, if at all, about the reporting that comes out of these companies? There's some noise being made about the standards that they apply in their accounting and so forth.
I think these are world-class companies, and I know there's been, there are negatives. There's let's put it this way: there's a lot of anti-China sentiment. The U.S. government is targeting them; they're doing everything they possibly can. There's also the issue of the variable interest entity structures, and KWEB. They have a lot of these stocks. I think all of them trade on the Hong Kong Exchange. So, what they found, and they own these depository receipts, and are the which are under this structure, because you can't really own a Chinese stock directly as a foreigner. And they were able to convert these into the Hong Kong shares, which are a little bit less liquid than the U.S. Depository shares, but there's so I think it's overblown. Let's just put it that way. I think, and I'm looking at the long view on this, and I have a feeling that neither country has in their interest mutually assured destruction.
You mentioned under as another positive, underinvestment in energy and commodities.
Yes, and I think this has a lot to do with ESG. And so I just believe that energy prices will stay higher for longer. We're not really adding to our positions. We've trimmed a little bit. I think we're going to get some demand destruction because of the recession. I would use the recession and any weakness in those stocks to probably add the positions. And I just, we're not seeing, when you look at drilling activity in North America, oil and gas drilling activity, you're seeing some pickup, but you're not seeing anywhere near the pickup that you saw, let's say, in 2007, 2008, 2009.
Growth stocks have been decimated. I guess maybe you might have touched on that.
We've one of the themes that I like is the idea of location independence, remote work, the idea that the government is trying to cancel everybody. So, maybe you want to have some mobility. And so there are a lot of stocks that went just, nuts in the pandemic, like Zoom, that I think Zoom got up to $470 a share. It's now under 100. The market cap, the cash is about 18% of market cap. Insiders, it's founder led. Insiders own 20%. So things like that. I know there's some competition there. None of these things are a slam dunk, but there are a lot of interesting ideas that are down, 75, 80%. Airbnb is another one that I recently recommended, and they're turning the corner, the profitability, founder led. I really like, I think they get it. I think Brian Chesky gets it when it comes to this whole theme about location independence, and I think they're very well positioned and basically owner operated, really long term oriented, which is what we like, and it's reasonable. I'm not saying these stocks are cheap or dirt cheap like the retailers, but they're reasonable, and who knows, maybe they'll get cheap or cheaper, and we'll be able to buy more. I don't really know.
Kevin, with only about a minute and a half left here, and there's so much more to ask you about, but you had some themes that we might discuss, and we just haven't gotten to them. But one that struck my fancy here: political correctness will increasingly corrupt corporate cultures and consumer brands. Get woke, go broke. And I'm having to wonder if you think Elon Musk might be seeing that as well with his. With his interest in Twitter.
I don't know that I would say that Musk is the poster child for that. I think he is somewhat politically incorrect in his position on Twitter. Really took a position in terms of free speech. So, I'm going to step back on Musk for a little bit, but I'm thinking more of the Disneys and the Nikes and these companies, Nike, ESPN at Disney, Nike. And I just think that, Microsoft, Google, these are companies that are really pushing this whole diversity and inclusion nonsense. And I think it's going to corrupt these cultures. And I just think it's a risk that investors are not really appreciating. And when you've got these stocks like Microsoft at like 25 times earnings or whatever, and heading into a recession, then you've got this added risk. I wouldn't want to touch companies like that. And I think you're going to find them in terms of bigger companies. Another example would be McDonald's. I think trying to promote the narratives, whatever the official narratives are, so they do dumb things like they've got 800 stores in Russia, and they sell them at a fire sale. They're trying to sell them at a fire sale. So I think a lot of this stuff can be destructive, and I just don't want to be anywhere near it.
All right, Kevin, we're going to have to leave it go at that. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll have to do it again sometime soon, but we are out of time. All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, we will have Peter Buchbar with us, Michael Oliver, and Michael Wood of Rena Gold. Until then, goodbye, and God's blessings to you.